welcome to another episode of the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. I'm Jessica Dahlquist, your host, and every Tuesday I interview a different mom who shares their motherhood journey and the lessons they've learned along the way. If I've learned anything from interviewing such a wide range of moms, it's that no two extraordinary moms look the same. We all have a story to tell, and we are all mothering in our own way. So let's celebrate that and learn from one another. Thanks for listening, and if you like what you hear, please share the show with a friend. Good morning and welcome to the Extraordinary Moms Podcast. It's Jessica. Thank you so much for tuning into our episode today. It's such a joy to be with you. I have an amazing guest for you today. She's one of my favorite podcasters, favorite Christian writers, and overall, just a delightful person. It's Sophie Hudson. I originally heard about Sophie on another podcast, and as I was hearing her voice and her conversation with the host, I was thinking, I wish we were friends. So today I can kind of fulfill that lifelong dream of being Sophie's friend and having conversation about motherhood with her. She's a mom of one, an author, like I said. She just had a new devotional release, and we're going to talk about that, about her motherhood journey, all the things. So excited to have Sophie on the show today. So thanks for tuning in, and I hope you love getting to know Sophie. So let's get to it with Sophie Hudson. All right, I'm so excited to bring Sophie Hudson to you today. Hi, Sophie.
Hey, Jessica, it's so good to be with y'all.
Oh, thank you so much for being on the show today. Where am I speaking to you from today?
I'm in Birmingham at home in my office, hoping that our dog does not go crazy because she goes crazy over everything.
Well, there you go. Well, I'm hoping my kids don't go crazy. They're in the other room. So we both have barriers to getting through this thing, but we're going to do it.
We do.
I love it so much. Well, it is so exciting because today, the day we're recording, is the day that your new devotional is launching. Congratulations.
Thanks.
Tell me more.
It's fun.
Let's just jump into that. Tell me more about this devotional, and then we'll go back and tell everybody the rest about you.
Well, you know, I had written a few other books, and I was actually working on the last one, which was kind of about cross-generational friendships between women. And in the middle of that, I thought, I want to write a devotional book for young women. And So I actually sent a text to somebody at my publishing company and said, hey, I want to write a devotional book for young women. And so we kind of started to talk about it and knew I'd have to kind of wedge it in between projects. And so, I love this generation behind us. I think they are so smart. I think they have so much courage and so much boldness, and I there's something about being able to pour into them a little bit through the written word, and I really wanted to write a book that would be a companion to them and that would give them a chance to write as well. It's a journaling devotional, so there are prompts after every devotion, and there's just a chance for them to write down their prayers and stuff like that, and so I'm super excited just to be able to do that kind of book. It was really fun to work on.
That's amazing. And it's so interesting to me. You are a mom of one son. I have three sons. So we're boy moms, right? And
yes.
You have an interesting calling kind of placed over your life that you found in ministering to young girls specifically. And so it's interesting that the Lord did not give you a daughter, but you've still been able to create this platform for encouraging young women and all ages of women, actually, through your ministry. What do you think of that?
I think it's the craziest thing. And I'd never thought about it because I was an English teacher for a long time. And then about 3 years ago, I moved into this job that's, I'm called the Dean of Women. But really, I mean, what I am, I'm an on-campus mama, essentially. I hand out chocolate. I hand out Kleenex. I kind of hear the day-to-day stuff that's going on. We have wonderful counselors who deal with the more complicated things and the harder things, but I'm really just there, you know, to kind of interact with them throughout the day and to encourage them and pray with them. And somebody said to me a few years ago, she said, don't you think it's something that for you to be the mama of one boy that you would find yourself in a spot where you're surrounded by all these girls? And I had never thought about it, but it's been the sweetest thing that the Lord did. Because, you know, I love women. I love relationships with women. I specifically love the chance to interact with young women. And I don't know, I don't for one second think that I could ever take the place of their moms or supersede their moms or anything like that. But it's been a really kind of a life-giving thing to just have a tiny voice for a tiny window of time, and they have taught me so much. And so it's been a really fun, neat, unexpected thing.
Well, and I think I've heard this so much from moms of teenagers. I'm not there yet. My oldest is only 7, but sometimes the mom can say the same exact thing as another female adult that your children might think is cooler or respect more in that moment or whatever, and they hear the same exact thing differently from them and they take it in, but you're just so glad they got the message. It's about the learning. It's not about who it comes from necessarily.
Yeah, I will say, I think the who the messenger happens to be diminishes a little bit in importance as they get older, because you just want them to get it. And I've even had moms, some mornings I'll get a phone call and it'll be a mom and she'll say, listen, if she comes in your office today and here's what we told her.
Yeah.
Like if you get any chance to reinforce that, we would love it. And so you kind of feel like you're on a team.
Totally.
Because I mean, you really can't speak life and encouragement and scripture and all those things into the lives of a young woman enough. And so I think as many places as you can get that, the better. Same for young men too.
Absolutely. Absolutely. My mom is a preschool teacher. And so she's had many phone calls on weekends. Mrs. Lieber, my daughter won't take her medicine and I feel like she'll listen to you. Could you just get on the phone just real quick and just be like, your medicine will taste delicious. Just do it for me. And they'll listen to Mrs. Lieber, but it's not a given. They'll listen to mom. It's the best. It's so great. Well, let's go back a little bit in your motherhood journey. Let's talk about early motherhood for Sophie with little baby Alex.
Yes.
What was that like? Did you always dream of being a mom, or what did you think it was going to be like? And what was it actually for you?
No, I never dreamed of being a mom, which sounds terrible in a way. I feel like, you know, when you're talking on a podcast to moms, you feel like you should say, oh, it was, but I really didn't. It just, I don't know. Probably part of that was just because I've never been somebody to look too far into the future. Like I sort of roll day to day. I always say, like, I'm always about what's ever going on that week. I can't go much farther out than that. And so I don't know that I thought about it that much, but was obviously clearly delighted when we found out that we were expecting Alex. And then after he was born, I thought, well, this is the best thing ever. I don't know why in the world I didn't see this before. And so, so I was really sort of caught up for probably the first 6 months and just the wonder of the love and the sort of the deep well of emotion you have for this child. And to the realization that that's really not at all dependent on the fact that you carry that child in your body. Mm. It's just a sort of a soul connection, a spirit connection that the Lord gives you. And I think you see that happen whether women give birth, whether they adopt, no matter how it happens. It's just a really sweet thing when it happens. And so I loved those little bitty days for sure.
Oh, yeah. And what were your fondest memories and what were the hardest parts for you?
Oh, golly. I loved, when Alex was little, it was the biggest kick, I think, just to watch him sort of behold the world around him. That was always a treat. But I'm going to tell you, like, I really probably struggled, more than I would even want to admit with sort of the surrender of myself in certain ways, or the surrender of my time, I should say, because the Lord is so faithful to show us so much about our relationship with him and our connection with him in the middle of all that parenting. But probably the demands on time were a little bit of a struggle for me. And then I think as they get older, you know, I mean, 18 months, 3 years old, those things are no joke. And then I think as they get older too, it's this sort of resting in the fact that the Lord has a plan for them, and it may not necessarily be what you have envisioned or what you would have asked for. Hmm. And so, you know, I think there's a big refining process that goes on in the middle of that.
Sure. And do you think you've had to be intentional about making those perspective shifts, or did it kind of come naturally to you to evolve with him as those seasons changed?
Oh, no, it was not natural at all. there's something about motherhood that just, you know, you are constantly put in situations where you can either fight what the next stage is, or you can fight, you know, whatever sacrifice that's going to require of you, or you can surrender. And I learned quickly about myself that I was not always of a mind to surrender. You know, I would really have to, I still have to really pray and really ask the Lord to give me what I don't have. I am not the most patient person. I'm super stubborn in a lot of ways. And so neither one of those things is always maybe the best match for motherhood.
Is there really a perfect temperament for motherhood that exists? I mean, there's always that idea of the perfect mom, but does she actually really truly exist?
You know, I think the perfect mom, honestly, is the one who can surrender.
Yeah.
And surrender, and not surrender to the wrong things. I don't mean that, but I mean, like, can see the bigger picture and go, okay, I get it. I'm gonna walk this road right here in front of me, and I'm not gonna try to change course or go the way that I want to go. And that's the best you can do, I think, is to walk in that kind of surrender. And it's kind of like marriage, you know. I mean, it's not natural. It's not, and I don't mean that marriage is bad at all.
Sure.
But I don't think, you know, people always think marriage is just for your happiness and your fulfillment. And what marriage does, as much as anything else, even in its most wonderful moments, is it exposes you for and all your struggles and all your sin. There's just no way to hide it in that context. And I think motherhood is similar in that way.
Yeah, and I think the very best moms that I see doing it really, really well, they're modeling for their kids how to roll with those instincts that may or may not be that desirable, right? So it may be the mom that raises their voice. It may be the mom that's more combative. It may be the mom that doesn't keep it clean up, whatever it is. But showing your kids how you work through those things and those challenges on a day-to-day basis, you're modeling for them far more than you'll ever teach them with your words, how they might approach similar things where they're battling their instincts and they're battling their weaknesses and trying to be better, not be perfect, but be better and apologize and make changes.
Yes, ma'am. Mm-hmm.
Those are the moms that I look to with a lot of encouragement. And I just look to them for guidance, and not in a way that I'm trying to be jealous of them or, you know, belittle myself. But I think it's great to surround yourself with people and a community of women that really inspire you to want to be better.
Yeah, I think that whole community thing is huge. Mm-hmm. It's not only encouraging to see, like, when I think of our friends here, particularly the mamas that I sort of do most of my mama in around, it's encouraging to see how they handle things. It's inspiring sometimes to see how they handle things. And then it's also, it's really comforting to be able to have a situation or to have a relationship where you can go in and say, you know what, I really messed this up. Like, I went from 0 to 100 in like 0.4 seconds. and for those moms to be able to look at you and say, it's okay, it happens to all of us. Like, there's something that is a comfort and that's healing in that. So I'm all for surrounding yourself with a supportive community of moms who are like you. You know, we're all so imperfect, just trying to do the best that we can and to learn whatever the Lord is trying to teach us in the middle of it.
Yeah. And one of your books, was it Giddy Up Eunice that dealt with friendships of different ages and stages?
Yes.
Okay,
yes.
Yeah. That was so, so great. And you talked about having friends that are older than you, younger than you, at your same level, but valuing all those perspectives in one. And so what have been your main takeaways from having those different stage friendships and things? What have you learned from those women that are beyond where you are now? And how has that added value to your life and your motherhood?
You know, when Alex was little, he was probably 4. And we had one night at dinner, we had a real standoff over some peas. if you would ask me at the time, I would have said it was a critical moment in his future. And I mean, like, he meant business that he was having nothing to do with him. And I meant business, and his daddy meant business that he was going to at least try. I mean, it was this whole, you know, it was the,
right.
We pick the weirdest battles sometimes. And that night we picked to battle over the peas.
Uh-huh.
And it happened to be the same night as a Bible study that I was a part of at the time. And my friend Mary Jo is the leader of that Bible study. And she has children who are my age. And so she's a grandmother, and she's just one of the wisest women I have ever known. And so we had the standoff over the peas, and I went over to Mary Jo's, and I didn't walk in her house in tears necessarily, but I walked in real amped up. Like I was way up there, you know, where I just needed one person to say, how are you? And I was going to unload.
Right.
And so, Mary Jo has this bar in her kitchen, and I always tell people, like, she always has her drinks on trays, which I think is very fancy. Like, very. You go into her house and the drinks are on trays. So it's, you know, there's something about it. She's just got that gift of hospitality. And she said, how are you? And I mean, I unleashed about the peas. And she listened to me and she nodded. And I mean, I took that thing all the way down to, if he is this willful about peas, what do we have down the road? Like, I was all in with the struggle of it. And so when I finally finished, which felt like about 15 minutes later, probably wasn't quite that long, she looked at me and she said, I feel like everybody's going to be fine. And I kind of looked at her and she said, I'm not super worried about it. And as she continued to talk, what she did was she put that whole episode in such perspective for me. And that has been the greatest gift for me, I think, in terms of having older women in my life, especially here in Birmingham where we do not have family, is that they give so freely and so wisely the gift of perspective. What hills do you really want to die on? What really matters in the grand scheme of things? And as somebody who can kind of get amped up from time to time, that has been so, so, so helpful to me. Mm. And so, you know, that's one thing that I'm continually thankful for, is to have older women in my life who can put things into perspective and who could say, maybe don't worry as much about the peas in terms of your child's long-term development as maybe investing in your marriage.
Right.
You know, I mean, like,
what do the peas represent? Yeah.
That might be more helpful long-term, you know, like, so I don't know. It's been the sweetest thing. And right. Especially, like I said, to be in a place where we don't have family, for the Lord to kind of give those voices, or, you know, and let me learn.
Sure. Absolutely. And choosing wisely who you listen to, right? Because I'm sure you've had, if you had told the pea story to somebody else, you may have gotten a different response, and it may have fed your fire, or it may have squashed you more, or made you feel more like, oh, I handled that so wrong. I'm terrible, you know? But going to the right people with pea stories and whatever story yeah. it is, and taking their feedback, And having those be the truth tellers, you have to pick those people wisely, right? Because sometimes we let in too many people and too many voices, and even strangers' voices, that dictate how we feel about situations, or how we feel about ourselves, or how we feel about our kids, or it goes on and on.
That's so true. You know, mm-hmm. And I think probably that has been another kind of good lesson for me over the last, you know, 14 years or however long, is just that you can't give the whole world a voice in how you parent. And if you do, you'll make yourself crazy. I mean, you know, you really, I always say, I think with those relationships with older women too, you know, where there's a natural connection, that's usually a good thing, where you feel safe. But when you see marriages that for whatever reason, you look at that and you go, you know what, I respect that. Mm. Or when you see older women's relationships with their grown children and you go, okay,
right.
They seem to have really navigated this well. And I think in the case of both of the women, Mary Jo and Ann, that I probably go to and sort of ask questions the most and confide in the most when tough times hit, you know, I look at both of them and their relationships with their husbands and their relationships with their grandchildren, and I go, okay, I'm after that. That is what I am after. Mm. I so respect the way that they parent and the way that they the way that they've cultivated these relationships in their families over time.
I love that. I love that so much. And so going back to your work with the young girls that you work with at school, and then your son as well, do you see differences in the way that you communicate with your son versus the girls? And I mean, how do you kind of view that? Because you have a first or a front row seat in terms of that. So what are you seeing in our culture today?
Okay, I don't know that I communicate that differently. I just know sometimes that the way that I communicate with the girls might make Alex roll his eyes a little bit in the tweakest way. But he's also at the same school, and so he's in and out of my office a lot during the day. And so it's really been funny to kind of see him. I don't know, he's learned to respond pretty well to those situations. Like if he's in my office and he sees a girl come in a certain state, he knows it's time to get up and get out. I don't know. I think with him and with the girls, one thing that I have learned probably the hard way is that you just kind of have to meet them where they are. Mm-hmm. You can't meet them where you wish they were or where you think they should be. And so you have to be a little bit unshockable. Mm-hmm. And so I've said over the last few years, you know, somebody could come in and say something really probably dramatic to me, and my reaction would probably be like, okay, well, let's talk about that. Because I think so many times with our reactions as adults, if we're not careful, when a younger person comes in to tell us something, if we react with something real big or we're super shocked, we put shame on it. We don't mean to, but we do.
Did you ever have that go poorly?
Oh, for sure.
Yeah. Yeah. And how do you how do you recover from that? So let's say it's with your child, and you're more likely to do that with a child than a third party who you're not invested mm-hmm. in their entire eternal salvation. So yes. How do you, when you're very emotionally invested in your child and mm-hmm. in their well-being, and they come to you with something that's big,
mm-hmm.
how do you
recoup? Found that I have to go back and apologize and say, can we hit reset?
Okay.
I blew that thing up.
Okay.
And I was not a good place. I was not a safe place for you to put that out there. I did not react well. Can we hit reset and start over? Like you just have to apologize.
Yeah.
You know, there have been so many situations at school where over the years where I feel like I've had to go back to people and say, you know what? That wasn't, you didn't get the best me in that moment. So can, you know, I really do want to hear your heart on this thing, and I don't want to interfere with you being able to communicate with me. And I really did, you know,
right.
I really did interfere. And so let's just try again. And that's really, I think sometimes that's all you can do is just to admit that you just bungled that whole thing just badly.
Right.
And usually I have found that with teenagers especially, that they're really forgiving, that they would rather you shoot straight with them than stand on some really questionable, what you might feel like at the time is some moral high ground, but really is not at all. It's just maybe a little bit of condemnation mixed in.
Sure.
You know, some good old-fashioned outrage.
Sure. You know. Oh, absolutely. And one thing I've heard you talk a lot about is you're trying to stay current with them. So you're reading the books that they're reading and knowing their music. And you don't love these things necessarily. You don't get these songs necessarily. But, like, you're trying to get them. That's what you're trying to get. And, like, my husband always says, like, I go on the trampoline because my kids like jumping on the trampoline. Not because I like doing it, but it looks like he's having a lot of fun. I'm like, do you love doing that? And he's like, well, not really, but I love them. And so is that kind of your stance of pouring into them through their interests? And kind of how do you do that?
You know, the principal at our school always says, we need to meet them on their ground. And our inclination, I think, so many times as adults, it's like, no, they need to meet us on our ground.
Mm.
But I think it's easier to develop relationships if you meet them on their turf. So that means you know, if you're a parent, it means you go to all the ball games that maybe, you know, on some level are a little boring.
Mm-hmm.
Or if you're a teacher, it means that, you know, you're showing up at their sporting events and you're going to their plays and all those different kinds of things. And the reason, like you said, I try to read what they're reading. I try to listen to some of what they're listening to. I try to know what's kind of out there in terms of social media, not so I can speak their language necessarily, just so I can understand it.
Sure, like, you're not coming down to their level. You're trying to, just have your mind open to what might they be thinking? What might they be exposed to? Things like that.
Because it's different than... Like, there was our junior high girls this last year were real into the whole Selection series. That is a series of books. It's a little bit of dystopian fiction about a girl who finds herself in a competition to become a princess of a country, like, you know, to marry this young prince. Mm-hmm. And so I kept hearing them talk about it, and they would get so animated, and I was like, I have no idea what this is about. So I started to read the books. Now, I don't know that I will ever mention that to the girls, but it just gives me sort of a shared vocabulary with them, even because sometimes, you know, if you try to speak their language, they're just so cheesed out by it, they can hardly stand it, you know.
Right, it's
like a grown-up who dabs, you know, and every teenager in the room goes, please don't do that, please don't do that. And like any teenager who was listening to this would say, nobody dabs anymore.
Right, they're over that. Right.
But it's just so you can kind of understand. And I also like to know, and I like to know this as a parent, I like to know what voices are they listening to, and what input are they getting? Like, somebody's pouring into them. So when you start hearing certain books, certain movies, certain television shows, when you start to hear those things pop up in conversation, well, how are those things pouring into them? What are those things teaching them? Because everything teaches us something. So that's really why I kind of like to know what they've got going on.
Sure. And I think there are parents that lean more towards trying to be their child's friend, and they are trying to do the dance moves or dress the way they're dressing or talk the way they're talking. And then
it's
you
a bad
kind
strategy.
It's
a bad strategy.
How do you draw that line?
Well, I think the main way I think I draw the line is I don't try to follow their trends. I just try to be aware of them.
Okay.
So I've still got to be the grown up,
right?
That's great. You know, like I've still got to be when I'm with those girls in my office or when I'm at school, you know, at school in whatever capacity, I've still got to be the grown up.
Mm.
So I don't get to be the kid. Like I got to be a kid one time, but I don't get to do that again. So I think, you know, that's the main thing is you are, just because you're aware of it does not necessarily mean that you try to be a part of it. Mm. I don't try to persuade them to like what I like. I don't try to gain their favor because maybe I've read something that they've read. But it's just super, super helpful to know a little bit about the world that they're living in.
Right.
And, you know, teenagers especially, like, they like their world. You know, I mean, they like, I think the biggest attraction of their phones is that it's their little domain. Like, you know, it's the little, it's something they can control.
Mm-hmm.
And so I don't necessarily want to, with the girls at least, I don't necessarily want to change the world that they're in. I just want to be able to offer some perspective, kind of like what Mary Jo and Anne over the years have done for me.
I love that. I think that is so important, and it starts young, and it's not being like, I'm up here, you're down here, but it's being like, I see where you are. I see what you're seeing. I hear what you're hearing, and this is what I have to offer from many more years of life experience. How valuable.
Yeah, you can't offer direction, I think. Like you can't offer instruction and direction if you don't really know where somebody is.
Mm.
So how do you know where somebody is? You figure, like, over time, through conversation, through observation, all those kinds of things, you listen to what they like to do. You talk to them about what matters to them, you know, and you watch how they behave and how they interact with other people. Like, it's a whole, you know, it's kind of like being in college. And
yeah,
and
right.
You get to study a little bit. But it really helps to cultivate relationship when you're willing to sort of, as the grown-up, you're willing to sort of say, okay, here's what's going on here.
Sure.
And I'm willing to meet you there.
I love that. I think that's so powerful and so wise for parents of any age child, and especially as their friends come around, your kids' friends and things like that. Like, what role would you play in their life? I think that's so wise and so great. So you
and I also think, by the way, I also think that kids, and I see this with Alex, like, he will listen to his friend's mom sometimes more than he will listen to me.
Sure.
You know what I mean? So, like, team up, everybody.
Like, buddy up, yeah.
I mean, it's super, super, super helpful, and it takes a little bit of the anxiety away.
It certainly does. Yeah, I totally agree. So in addition to being an author, you're a longtime podcaster, like one of the longest time podcasters.
I will tell you what, I don't even know about all that.
And it's so funny because – you have self-admittedly been late to the game on Insta stories and technology and, you know, things like that. But somehow, many, many years ago, you figured out how to podcast. How did that start? And you do it with Melanie Schenkel, another fabulous author. How did you and Melanie first become friends, and how did you start that podcast?
Well, we became friends because she left a comment on my blog that kind of, we had both started blogs about the same time. I think I started mine sometime maybe like late 2005. Melanie was early 2006. And she left a comment that I was like, oh, I felt like we had something in common. And I know every time I tell this story, I think this sounds like eHarmony, and it's not that, but it was just the internet and blogs were kind of a different deal back then. There was so much commenting that went on back and forth on blogs. And now we don't see that as much because of Instagram and Facebook and all that kind of stuff. And so I replied to her comment. We just kind of started to email because we were both new bloggers. We were both were a little bit different. A lot of the Christian women's blogs back then were more devotional oriented, and we were both just like silly, you know, kind of talking about day-to-day stuff.
Yeah.
So we had a connection there, and then I had one son, she had one daughter. At the time, Melanie was working full-time, I was working full-time, both of our husbands were in business on their own, and so our lives sort of lined up. She'd gone to Texas A&M, I went to Mississippi State, both, you know, Marine and White, both ag schools. And so we just started to email, and then I don't know how much later, maybe 6 months later, we talked on the phone, and we got to where we would talk on the phone almost every afternoon when Alex and Caroline would take naps. Uh-huh. And so, and we would talk about blogging and writing and all that kind of stuff, and we would laugh our heads off. And one day my husband said, y'all should start a podcast. He was an early podcast listener.
Okay, it's all thanks and to him.
I don't know how to do that. And he said, well, I think you just need a microphone and a way to record it. And so at the time we recorded it, it was not even iMessage. It was some Apple messaging thing. It was iChat. And you could talk on iChat. Uh-huh. And so we would record it that way. And I accidentally started to play the other day. I was testing to hear if the latest one sounded okay, and I hit some button, and the very first one started to play, and I mean, if I could have crawled under the carpet in the room, I would have. It is so bad. I mean, it's really like, so we're podcasting.
Yeah. We're doing this thing. We're so professional. Yeah.
The first podcast, we talked to each other as we read a magazine. I mean, it was terrible. And so we've been really super inconsistent. We've done everything wrong. But somehow, some way, we've sort of stuck with it. Melanie forever has internet issues at her house. She actually has AT&T there today. So I don't know if the funniest thing to me, that thing it's 10 years old.
And so it's literally like eavesdropping on your conversations. Mm-hmm. That's basically what it is. Mm-hmm. You don't read magazines anymore. And sometimes you'll have a guest here and there, but I don't know. It just feels so good to listen. I don't know why. I feel a little voyeuristic, but it's just the best.
Yeah, I mean, ideally, when we record one, we will not have talked in a couple of days.
Uh-huh.
And so we have some things to kind of catch up on. But we really do just talk about the things that women like to talk about, or that a lot of women like to talk about.
I love it.
With us, we like to talk about sports a lot. And so, because we both love college sports. And so we talk about football, or we talk about skincare products, or we talk about just, you know, silly things that happen. It's fun.
We
really have enjoyed it, and it's been really neat as the podcasts have grown in popularity. It doesn't feel so strange anymore, because for a while I was kind of embarrassed to tell anybody that we had one. Mm-hmm. You know, I mean, mm-hmm. like that was some straight up nerdery. And so not that there's anything wrong with being a nerd, but like it was kind of weird. I felt like I had a double life, like Hannah Montana.
Right.
You know?
Yeah. So, and even still, like, there's still people that do not know how to listen to a podcast. And that kind of blows my mind. But we're getting there. But it's taken a while to gain traction. But I think it's just such a great resource, because there's something for absolutely everybody.
For everybody. And what's been so fun, you know, as more and more people have podcasts, is like, I have a friend here, Jamie Golden, who she and her friend Knox McCoy have a podcast called The Popcast.
Love it.
Which is just about pop culture. It's so fun. And just to have people that you can go to and say, like, so how'd y'all do this? Mm-hmm. Or I'm trying to edit this way. How do y'all do, you know, just little things like that, where there was a point in time where I was completely dependent on Google, and now it's so fun to feel like there's a community of podcast creators, and we can help one another, and I love that.
I love that too. Well, you're doing such a great job, and I just enjoy when you do put out an episode. It's been more regularly lately, so good job.
Thank you. Yeah. Don't worry, there'll be a big, huge gap coming soon. Oh. Like anytime we get on a roll, we're going to go about 4 months and not do anything.
But it builds anticipation for that. So then when the new one does drop, it's like, oh, all right, we get to catch up with Sophie and Melanie. This is great. I think it's awesome. I think it's so wonderful. Well, you're doing a great job. It's called the Big Boo Cast, is what it's called for people that want to listen. And I've mentioned it before, I don't know where, but on past episodes. But just love it. You're doing such a great job. So
thanks.
I want everyone to go check out your new devotional. What is it called? Where can people find it?
It's called All in All, Loving God Wherever You Are. And you can find it at any of the bigger booksellers like Amazon, Barnes & Noble, Lifeway, and then hopefully at some of your smaller booksellers as well. And so it should be pretty easy to find. And I hope it really will be an encouragement to the young women who read it. That's my heart for it, at least.
Oh, I love that so much. And I'm going to link to everything in the show notes so people can go pick it up. And when this airs, it will be available to pick up right away. I love that. Well, do you have anything else coming up on the horizon we can look forward to or that you can look forward to?
Oh, well, we've got back to school coming in a couple of weeks. Mm-hmm. So our lives are about to change.
Yeah.
What with waking up early and all. So we've got that coming up. And then I've got on my blog, I've listed under, I think, speaking, but I'm going to be out and about a little bit this fall with some different speaking stuff, and always love to meet people at those kinds of things who have listened to you or have listened to other podcasts and friends. There's always lots to talk about when you meet people who listen to podcasts. So all that's on my blog at bmama.net.
I love it so much. Well, Sophie, this has been such a delight. It's been so fun getting to chat with you after hearing so many conversations with you and Melanie. I am just so thrilled to be on the other end of the phone with you today. So I always ask my guests one final question, and it's this, Sophie. What would you tell your pre-motherhood self?
Oh, you know, I think if I could tell her anything, it would probably be that it's all going to be okay.
Yeah.
And that here's the big thing, honestly, about that is that, you know, I can remember Alex still being in an infant carrier and then being in a stroller and then being old enough where I could strap him in the grocery cart or whatever. And I would look at moms with older kids and it would make me a little sad because I so dreaded, you know, that reality that he was going to get bigger, and that because I really did, I was so enamored with, you know, just everything about having a little one in the house and running around and all that kind of stuff. And, and always kind of wondered if we would have more than one child, but didn't really know. And so, you know, you never really know. Is this the only time I'm going to do this? Will I get to do this again? But here's what I would say now to my pre-motherhood self and to any young mama, whether she has one child or she has six, is that every stage really is more fun than the last one.
Mm.
And as much as I loved being a mama of a little one, I love being the mama of a teenager. It is the biggest blast to have these people, this person in our house who interacts with us and who is funny and who has his own way of looking at the world. And that has been the sweetest gift. To have just assumed when I was a new mama that, you know, I would not enjoy any part of motherhood as much as I enjoyed those young years. So it gets better.
Oh, I love that so much. Sophie,
it's all fun.
This has been so wonderful. Thank you for taking the time to chat with me. Thank you for sharing your life in the podcast and books on your blog everywhere. You're just so delightful and you're just sharing so much light in the world. And I love people like you. So thank you for speaking with me today.
Hey, thanks, Jessica, for having me. It was so fun to get to talk to you.
Enjoy the launch of your book and just good luck with the start of school.
Thanks.
Okay, have an awesome day.
You too.
Bye-bye. Bye. Oh, that was such a joy to talk with Sophie. How great to start my day that way. If you haven't already checked out Sophie's books, I definitely want you to go check out Giddy Up Eunice, her new devotional All in All, and other books she's written. She is just so gifted, so witty, and so sincere in her intention behind sharing God's love for everyone. And I love that message so much. So anything we talked about will be in the show notes on extraordinarymomspodcast.com. You can check it out there. You can follow me on Instagram at JessicaDahlquist3. Or on Facebook at Extraordinary Moms Podcast. And anytime a new episode comes out, if you're subscribed on iTunes, that means it will directly come to your queue, your unplayed list. So make sure you're subscribed. If you haven't left a review, I would just love it if you do that. That means so much to me, and it helps new people to find the show every day. I love this community so much, and I'm so grateful that you tune in every week. And if this is your first week, welcome. We have so many more episodes behind us. This is episode 162. So there's 161 others where that came from. So if you enjoyed today's episode, dip back into the archives through podcast app or on our website and listen to the other extraordinary moms we have on the show. Sophie, thanks for being on today. I just loved that conversation. I hope you did too. If you're new around here, I have new episodes of interviews coming out every Tuesday, and then on Fridays, it's kind of a mixed bag of content. But this week, I'm talking about family mission statements. My family and I have a mission statement posted on our wall, and it's something that gets a lot of attention every time anybody comes over. They want to know how we came up with it, what it means, how they can do it, and I'm going to share that with you on Friday. So make sure you're subscribed. Tune in on Friday for that episode on family mission statements, and I hope that will bring some life and some intention into your family as you embark upon the new school year. So have a great day, everybody, and we'll see you next week for another episode with another extraordinary mom. Bye.